or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Never has Garrison Keillor's observation that all of the world thinks they are above average than when we're talking about communication. Everybody thinks they communicate well, but most people don't. It's a much more difficult task to communicate well than you think, both to present your ideas in a way that are both clear and understandable and concise rather than wordy, but more importantly, in a way that gets people to change their attitude, change their behavior. And listening is even more difficult and even more unduly optimistic. We are unduly optimistic about it because it seems so easy. Listen, it seems so passive, but it's not. What people say and don't say, noticing what they don't say, how they say it, their change of voice, the use of vocabulary, knowing when to interrupt, when not to interrupt. Not easy at all. And because people's communication styles vary so much, you have to be flexible or even a chameleon to be able to be wisely responsive to that particular person. So I thought that in preparing for this show, and otherwise, I would create a communication test, quiz, whatever you want to call it, that addresses a dozen of what I think are some of the most important communication principles. And I thought it would be fun, rather than just giving it to you, give it to my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko, who I really believe is a great communicator. We'll see how great she is. So without further ado, the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, member of the State Superintendent of Schools Cabinet, and Woman of the Year for her congressional district, Dr. Barbara Nemko, in 2009, excuse me. Dr. Barbara Nemko, welcome, and thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome, and good morning, day after birthday boy. You survived.
With a few extra calories, alas. It's something I would never allow myself to eat, but that cannelloni at La Moulin was to die for. We went to Monterey, but lest we digress, and some listener hate us for taking a moment to not be on topic. Let us get to the topic. So, question one, Barbara Nemko, and I made these relatively, if not easy, but at least quick to answer. They're all true or false. So,
okay.
Question one, don't think ahead. Just listen to what the person is saying. True or false?
Oh, that's hard.
I told you I wasn't good. Our KELW listenership is sophisticated. They don't need the basic elementary level. We need the advanced level.
Well, it's hard to give that just a true or a false. I think you have to have thought ahead, because you have to know where you're trying to go in this conversation. Having done that, you need to suspend all that thinking ahead for the moment to really listen, because once you let your mind wander to thinking ahead, you miss the nuance of what's going on in the conversation.
And so you would just say
say true with a caveat.
I am sorry. It is impossible. As you can tell, dear listeners, I did not show her these questions in advance. This is,
As you can tell, dear listeners, he's harder on me than on any other guest.
So it is impossible to not think ahead. That's just reality. One of the reasons is simply that it's automatic. And the other is you do want to have some tentative idea of where you want to go in the conversation. So it's, as one of the most stupid principles that has been often given, don't think ahead, just stay in the moment. That is conventionally offered. Bad idea. Especially if you're reasonably bright. So, just try to also simultaneously, we all multitask. So fine, think ahead. But keep one ear listening to what the person's saying, as you say, for the nuance. And the other ear, yes, planning what you might say. And that's a much more natural and realistic way to go. Make sense?
sure.
She doesn't like, she's been always been a very good student. She doesn't like not getting, she already doesn't have 100%. Anything less than 100% makes her unhappy. So
that's
you're right. Right now your percentage is zero.
Zero. This is not a good percentage.
No. Well, let's see if we can get you up to 50%, which if you get this one right, you'll be all the way up to 50. That's still an F, but at
all
least you...
All the questions are like this. I may end up with a zero.
Okay. Question two on the communication quiz. And by the way, dear listeners, certainly feel free to test yourself. This is an utterly unvalidated test, but it'll be curious to see how many of the 12 you get right. So... because I'll have the scoring scale. You see, if you have 11 or 12 out of 12, you are become a super honored member of the Work with Marty Nemco workforce. If you get less than 5, we send you to re-education camp.
Well, let me point out that I said exactly what you said. It's just you made me choose true or false.
Well,
false dichotomy.
Well, yes, it was a nuanced question, but you erred in total on the side of the incorrect answer. Therefore, like any good quiz show host, you have to make a decision. Okay. And the buzzer must come into play.
Next.
Okay. True or false? Don't flatter too much. It's transparent sucking up. True or false?
False. It works all the time.
That sounds like you're guessing, but yes, you are correct.
Oh.
It is false. UC Berkeley professor Jennifer Chatman set out to find a point at which flattery becomes ineffective. She couldn't find one.
We're all human.
We're all fatty. So I'm so proud of you. Or no, the feminist way is you should be so proud of yourself. Otherwise, I'd be denying you your agency. So you should be so proud of yourself. You've gotten that correct, and you're now up to 50%. Your score is 50%. You're 1 for 2.
And I am.
Yes. Okay. Question number 3 in the utterly unvalidated communication quiz, which nonetheless I believe contains some pretty important principles on how to communicate well. Number 3. This is the easiest question on the test, so I'm very optimistic that even you will...
I beg your pardon.
Okay. True or false? This is a really long one. That's also, by the way, one of the rules of true or false questions. If it's really long, it's almost always... I won't say it. Okay,
everyone.
I'll tell you later.
Say it.
Yeah. It's wise to follow the traffic light rule. During the first 30 seconds of an utterance, your light is green. You can talk without worrying you're a blabbermouth. During the next 30 seconds, your light is yellow. The risk is growing that the other person would like you to stop talking because there's something she wants to respond to or because she's bored. At the 60-second mark, your light is red. It's a conversation, not a monologue. Yes, rarely you'll want to, quote, run a red light and keep talking. For example, if you're telling an engaging anecdote. But usually you'll want to shut up or ask a question. If the person wants to know more, he or she can ask. True or false?
Absolutely, positively true.
You're absolutely, positively right. Yes, of course. That's when the reason I was going to, by the way, this little ancillary tip I'm going to offer, true or false questions, generally, when they're long, they're true because there are very few short statements that are absolutely true that could make their way on a test. Of course, the sky is blue, yes. But normally, in order to make a true statement really true, the test writer's got to add a lot of qualifiers. And so that's why long questions in the true or false question tend to be true. So now...
But aside from that, I think what that particular statement is one of the biggest problems for people knowing when to stop talking, mm-hmm. and it drives the listener wild.
Absolutely. Everybody thinks they're fascinating and they wouldn't keep talking, but the people don't realize how bored people get, how irrelevant details which may feel important to you are absolutely irrelevant, or your little personal anecdotes that are fascinating to you that are boring to everybody else. That's true not only in private conversation, but it's absolutely true among public speakers. Unless you are a great public speaker, charismatic, dynamic, filled with information, filled with stories, people can't stand to I mean, think about, Barbara, how many speeches we have heard at various events where the person kept going on and on and on, and we just were dying. Is that a fair statement?
I was at one the other night. It was incredible.
Yeah. Dear listeners, we're not talking about somebody else. we're probably talking about you. Keep your conversation, keep follow the traffic light rule in private conversation. 30 seconds is okay, 60 seconds is a limit. And when you're in public speaking, unless you're great, keep it very short. Better a 3-minute talk than a 20-minute a soporific. Soporific's a fancy word for put you to sleep. Okay. So, hey, Barbara, you're into passing territory now. You're 2 for 3. That gets you to 67.
God, my mother would be proud.
You got a D so far. 67, that's a D.
I take away the pride part.
The superintendent with a D. That's very good. Okay. Now you've got a chance to get into C territory if you get question 4 right. Okay. Now, this is the shortest question on the quiz. Number 4, true or false? Never interrupt.
I'm going to say true.
I'm sorry, you continue in F territory. That is incorrect, clearly incorrect. That isn't even borderline. Here's why. Even people like, yeah, you're right that some people like top sports agents like Lee Steinberg and the O.J. Simpson jury consultant Joe Ellen Demetrius do believe that interrupting is the worst communication sin, but it's not their quiz, this is my quiz. I would not be that broad brush.
How about I give you an F?
Well, you always
Wait
do
a minute.
Anyway.
I think I'm going to evaluate the quiz.
You should, at the end, right. You should give me, that fair is fair.
I will.
At the end of the quiz, you will give me a letter grade for the quiz.
I didn't realize you made up this quiz. I thought this was a quiz you found somewhere that was valid.
Made up is a bit diminishing of it. It is the distillation of my years of having read books and articles on career, on communication coaching, and my having coached hundreds and hundreds of people on communication. So, yes, I made it up. And, yes, I will allow you the final say, which was to bestow on me the F, if you feel it may deserve at the end. But for now, I'm in charge.
I think your 30 seconds is up.
Yes, indeed. Okay, but here's the explanation for why it's incorrect. The rule, never interrupt, is incorrect. Especially if your conversation partner likes to interrupt. And as I said at the top of the show, people are very different in their preferences about interrupting. Midwesterners in general are very, very polite, and the Southerners, and they want you to finish talking or they will be offended. But many other people in different cultures that may perhaps go unnamed interrupt as a matter of style. Okay, I will mention Jews, for example, or Italians. Are always interrupting each other. It's the natural flow of things. So one size fits all, never interrupt, is inappropriate. It can make for a more uninhibited, enjoyable, and a time-effective exchange. That said, you got to stay conscious of whether in that given situation, the likely benefits of interrupting someone outweigh the liabilities. And I got to admit, Barbara, I pride myself on my honesty on the show. Clearly, I cannot ever inhibit myself from interruption. So while I may say it's, interrupting is okay and it's time, there's times not to, I can't control myself. So I give myself an F on that.
I want to come back to that question at the end, but moving on.
Okay. Question 5. On the communication quiz. First of all, let our listeners know. Listening to the work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, I am giving her and you the communication quiz. We've heard the term IQ many times, although it's becoming certainly out of favor in today's zeitgeist. Well, we're testing your CQ, your communications quotient, and we're on number 5. True or false? These are all true or false questions for those of you just joining us. True or false? You build credibility with good posture and by speaking from the lower part of your natural pitch range, not your forced pitch range, but your natural pitch range. True or false?
True.
It is true. Very good. So now you are 3 for 5, and that gets you up to 60%. I think
that's... I could almost get a D.
Yeah, that's a D minus. I think I'm going to send a report to the state superintendent of your grade on this to see if maybe he'll kick you off the cabinet. Okay, number 6. True or false? Effective communicators look for opportunities to make statements that move toward a person. Agree, amplify, even good-naturedly tease.
Absolutely.
True. And you are absolutely right. Of course, sometimes you're going to want to disagree with somebody, but your relationship pays a price every time you do. So you got to make sure that it is worth the price for you to make a stated disagreement. Okay, you're 4 for 6. So now you're at 67. Now you're at a solid D. You're all the way into solid D territory. No D minuses. Yes. Okay, question number 7. True or false? When criticizing, don't bother sandwiching your criticism between two positive statements. That tactic's been around so long, people usually perceive it as an artifice.
False. I'm putting that one right with the flattery.
Right. Even when people recognize that you're using the sandwich technique,
They like it.
It tends to disarm them. They like it. They're more open to criticism. Now, there is an exception. In a complacent person, sandwiching your negative comment between two positive things may generate what I call insufficient disequilibrium. So she'll remember the positives and figure the negatives, those can be blown off. So, but generally, you're right. So now you are 5 for 7, which I think puts you in the 70-something category.
Moving right up.
Yep. So you're a C student right now, and there's still hope for you yet. Okay. Question number 8 on the communication quotient quiz. True or false? When disagreeing, it's wise to use California couching. For example, I certainly can understand why you feel that way.
True, 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 true.
Very good. Let me finish it for the listeners.
You said that interrupting was good. That was your opinion.
you're right.
Jewish, so I'm doing it.
I don't begrudge you doing it, but for our dear listeners, they're entitled to hear the rest of the question and the answer. That's very good. So, repeating it. When disagreeing, it's wise to use California couching. For example, I certainly can understand why you feel that way, but I'm wondering whether this approach might make sense. Then you insert your idea. What do you think? And that is absolutely right. Of course, like all techniques, it can be overused. But California couching, well, it's my term, I made it up, increases the chances that your conversation partner will consider your suggestion on its merits rather than rejecting it because she felt attacked. So now you're 6 for 8. I'm impressed. We're at 75. That's still a C, but I can see the land of B's in your future.
Thank God.
Quite well. Let's see now. The pressure's on, kid. Question 9 in the communication quiz. The 4, true or false? The 4 most important words are, what do you think?
Agree.
You're right. At least in Bill Marriott, the founder of Marriott Hotels, and you stayed at a Marriott, and you loved it, just last week. Yes, he says those are the 4 most important words, and it's certainly an underused and usually helpful question. What do you think? It gets buy-in. So now you are 7 for 9, and mm-hmm. that takes you to just about 80%. Almost,
on,
about 78, 79%. You're certainly in C-plus territory. Okay, question number 10. True or false? It's dangerous to be too nice too early. You risk being taken for granted, and the person will work less hard to gain your favor. True or false?
Well, now, see, I have an advantage here. Because I know you wrote the test, and I know you believe that. So I can up my score by saying yes.
But you're right, and so that gets you to a B minus. You're 8 for 10. But now, do you agree with, you know, this is not a monopoly. I don't have a monopoly on wisdom here. Do you think that's right? If on day one you're just super saccharine sweet and you're nice and you're tremendously eager to please and et cetera, doesn't that increase, first of all, doesn't that create a very high bar to have to maintain? Doesn't it make you feel you're desperate? Does it make them feel you're desperate, that you're easy, that you can be taken for granted? Isn't it better, I'm not saying be mean, but to start out just mildly positive, and that will make people feel they've got to work for your favor, and therefore they'll feel better when they do get your favor?
You know, like everything else, that's a very nuanced question. It depends on the situation and with whom and under what circumstances.
Yeah.
It also depends on what your natural personality is like. If you're somebody who is not typically very positive and sweet, then you're creating a very high artificial barrier for yourself to maintain. If you are normally very positive, I certainly don't want you to have to hide that and be more neutral because you're afraid that people will take you for granted. If that's how you are, then that's fine. Let them take you for granted, because then if you're ever negative, that's a wake-up call to them. Wow, this person who's positive about everything now is saying, whoa,
put the brakes on, I would pay a lot of attention to that.
Now, I could counter that, but I'm going to let you have the last word. Dear listener, that's another communication tool that's on the test. You don't have to win every argument. Even if you feel you can. In this case, for example, I made a decision that because my point is only maybe slightly better than what I, you know, the point I would now make maybe only slightly better, at least in my perception, but not that much better. I didn't want Barbara, I wanted, especially since I'm in control of this segment, I'm asking her the questions. I didn't want to, you know, get the last word and therefore make her feel one down. That's another example of communication skills. It is nuance. I deliberately, as I said, I've created this quiz, and hopefully this the ancillary conversation, that's the derivative conversation, to focus on the nuance. Because in the end, as I said at the top of the show, communication is very difficult. It is about the nuance. If you're expecting, for example, job searchers, if you're expecting someone in a networking meeting to go to bat for you, it is all about the nuance to make them feel valued and yet not so valued that you feel you're a sycophant and that you are just a toady and you're not bringing anything to the table yourself. Very nuancey. The bottom line, Barbara, you're now 8 for 10, which gets you to 80%. You're now at a B-.
All right.
Now we've got two more questions. Going to really improve your score. Question 11 on the, what's your CQ quiz? What's your communication quotient quiz? True or false? The most important listening tool is simply to focus. Really pay attention. True or false?
True.
It is true. Because there's so, you know, people who want to sell books are always trying to, you know, focus on the body language thing and on other very subtleties. But in the end, it comes to half of it is really focusing on listening. Yes, you may think ahead, but focusing on listening. So you're now 9 for 11, which takes you to you're pretty much at a B at this point. And so now, number 12, you're shot at a B+. Question number 12 on the communication quiz. The last question. True or false? Be vigilant for changes in your conversation partner's body language.
Absolutely.
I am sorry. It sounds obvious, but it was not. The meaning of a change in body language is too often, maybe most often, unclear. Focusing too much on body language distracts you from the more important components of effective communication that we've talked about before. So, not really. It is less important. Body language is less important than the book authors would have us believe, unless you're an FBI agent who's highly trained. And there's this wonderful guy named Paul Ekman who wrote a book about micro-expressions, but you've got to be a highly trained person. Generally, you're more likely to be misled by devoting too much of your mental energy to the person's body language and not that thereby taking away, reducing the amount of room in your mental energy, what you and I call M space, to focus on what's really important. So
my mother is turning over.
Well, it's still a B-. You pass. It's not a bad grade. So, but your comments were excellent. So we got to boost you up to a full B because of the ancillary, no, B+, because of the ancillary good comments you made. Now, but as I promised you, I promised you I would let you rate this quiz. What letter grade would you give this communication quiz?
What grade did I get?
A B+ with the I gave the subjective tip to your to boosted you up a bit because of your comments.
I'll give you a B+ for your comments.
So if I gave you an F, I'd get an F on the quiz?
Very likely.
So great. Yes. So all it's so it goes to prove that all it's about is flattery. Flattery somebody, you get a good grade. Be critical, you get a bad grade. Is that the upshot of all this?
I think this is everything in communication is so nuanced that when you make it a dichotomy, it becomes a false dichotomy. Obviously, let's take the last question, for example, about looking at body language. If you are so focused that you're looking at whether their nose twitches, that may be too much focus if you're not paying attention to what they're saying. But when you're in the middle of a conversation and you see somebody suddenly stiffen, you need to pay attention to that, and that's a really good time to invoke the 30-second rule. So it's time to fairly quickly shut up, and it would be a great time to say, what do you think?
Absolutely.
Because you don't want to go too far down the road of something that the person you're talking to is vehemently opposed to when we're trying to come to consensus. Again, the other thing that we didn't even talk about is what's the purpose of the communication? We communicate on so many different levels for so many different things. Sometimes you're communicating to convey information. That would have some different rules than when you're communicating because you're trying to solve a problem and you need to come to consensus. And obviously you want the consensus to solve the problem the way you want it solved, and that may be different than the initial way the other person wants it solved. So all of these things are highly, highly dependent on the situation, the person, and the outcome.
Absolutely. And that's why, but in the radio, the reason I developed the true or false for radio, you can't give people, you know, long open-ended questions or multiple choice. So for radio, it's perfect. But also, I will admit, though, I want to defend that your incorrectness on the answer. You weren't listening carefully enough to question 12. Obviously, if someone is stiffening, you don't have to be vigilant to notice that. If somebody suddenly stiffens, that's obvious. But I deliberately wrote the question, be vigilant for changes in your conversation partner's body language. To devote too much of your mental energy to that vigilance is looking for subtleties that usually are invalid. So obviously, if somebody takes a deep sigh or stiffens or suddenly starts to laugh or whatever, you don't have to be vigilant to notice that. And that's why the question was as it is. And yes, it was nuanced because you and our KELW listeners deserve nuance, not the obvious. Let me give out the phone number, though. Dear listeners, if you have a communication dilemma, a difficult conversation you are about to have or think you should have, or you've just had and want to tell the story, your question or your comment regarding a difficult conversation relating requiring excellent communication skills and nuance, this is the time to call. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And it looks like we've got calls right away on the line here, so as soon as we can, we will put this caller in. No, we don't. Okay, so let's, while we're waiting for the calls to come in, let's move to to segment two. First of all, let me ask you this question. Is there anything else that you would like to add about what you think is a communication skill that is critical and nuanced, under-discussed, that our listeners should be aware of?
That's under-discussed. No, I think all of these things are discussed. I think it's important. The most important conversations are the ones that are the most difficult. Although all communication is important, because if you're a violator of the 30-second rule on a regular basis, people won't want to get together with you to have communication.
Then
when you have a problem, it's a bigger problem.
Let me ask you a question, and this may not have a good answer, but one of the things that makes you a good communicator is that you're just calm by nature. So when everybody else is getting rattled or you get made defensive, you manage to stay calm. You can, you rarely get upset. Do you have any advice? I mean, other than, people have a different physiological predisposition to being a hothead or being level-headed. Any advice on how to stay more level-headed in difficult situations?
To recognize, perhaps, that in most situations, the world won't end even if the conversation doesn't end the way you want it to.
Okay.
It's kind of know when to hold them, know when to fold them.
And if
you have that mindset going in, you're less likely to get really agitated.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, I'll give out the phone number again one more time. If you either have a problem regarding communication, a conversation you're facing that's difficult and you'd like our advice as to how to couch it, how to deal with it, or you've had a difficult conversation that either went very well and you want to brag about it, or it went poorly and you'd like to know how Barbara or I might have done it differently, you can call. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. 844-841-4134. And now I see we do have calls on the line, so let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What is your question or comment?
Hi there, you two.
Hi.
I have a comment that the reason why I love your show so much with Barbara on, particularly, is because of the fact that when you two communicate, it's not like when you have a normal guest on to where, you know, you've met him once before, maybe never met him and all that. Because you're putting your best foot forward, both of you. You haven't really been in each other's face ever. Whereas in you guys' case, you've obviously been there. And you've even had a show or two that I know of where you entered the show not speaking to each other, basically.
Right.
Oh, yes, that has been true in the past.
Just once or twice. I think it's just once, but you're right.
And so with you guys being real world, not a situation comedy, not a we're going to do the best we can do to get through this, you guys really don't hold all airs out. You kind of show what's really going on. That's why I know that particular, not because you guys have been non-talking exactly, but because Marty has said so before that, you know, we entered the show, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me mature to where I'm looking at how, and I'm a man, don't get me wrong, I'm an adult, but it makes me more adult, more mature, being able to see how two people can do this and still rise above. Like if I had my daughter with me and we're not getting along, or my mother with me, we're not getting along, my neighbor with me, we're not getting along. You make it real world.
Thank you. The other thing, I will admit that it's something that makes it easier. It's such a privilege to have a radio show, so that no matter what problems that Barbara may have had, and Barbara and I may have had off the air, you know, the privilege of being able to come on and talk to thousands of people, you know, it humbles you and makes your own personal problems seem trivial. So it's kind of easy to put them aside when you're talking on the air. Not so easy when we're furious at each other and perhaps we're locked in a car with each other driving somewhere for 2 hours.
But I'm sure a lot of that is assuaged when the show is over, because you've talked to each other in a more civil tone. You've calmed down quite a bit from the original issue, which really isn't important. Like you said a while ago, it's not, like Barbara said, that it's not the end of the world type of a deal. At the time it is, it seems like it. But I really grow when you guys are together. I really appreciate your show because, like I say, we've all been there to where we could talk to anybody in the world, a stranger, and get along with them, even though they may say the most horrible thing to you, and you get along with them a little bit easier. But your neighbor or somebody you're very sensitive about may say something that just triggers you off. And that's not really, you know, mature or correct or anything, but that's real world.
Well, I appreciate your call very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Barbara.
Yeah. It's always, you know, that's why I hate having you on the show, because every time you're on, somebody calls in to say they really like the show when Barbara's on.
But they wouldn't know the difference if they weren't listening to you all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So I just serve as a negative contrast. Okay. All right. Let's turn to segment two. One of the an ethical dilemma in my field of career counseling is the question of resume writers. Is it ethical to hire a resume writer? And there are two sides to this, and there's a lot of nuance about it as well. And so we're going to switch now, you know, whereas in the previous segment I gave you this communication quiz and I was kind of in the one-up position and took the lead, essentially. Let's switch. And
so
what we're going to do is...
What do you think?
Right, exactly. If what we like, we have a very unusual, for those of you who've never heard us do this before, whenever we take a debate topic, we have an unusual format. Because very often the winner of a debate is dependent not only on which side is a wiser issue, but how good a debater the person is. That doesn't help you, the listeners, so much, because you can't separate out whether one side of the debate was a better, a more legitimate side, or whether the debater was better. So what we do is each of us take one side of the debate for the first half of the debate, and then we switch sides so that you, the listener, gets to hear both of us advocating for both sides of the debate. And then I'll invite you to call in, and you can say which side, not which person, but which side of the debate seems more persuasive to you. Make sense? So let's start, Barbara, by having you take the lead, and I'll simply ask you to take whichever side you like better, for starters. Do you think it's ethical to hire a resume writer? Take the whatever position you want.
Okay, I will start with the yes, it's ethical.
Okay.
It's okay. I think in this world, each of us is always trying to put our best foot forward. There are many people who have taken classes, they have acquaintances, they're at a college that has a job center, they are working with people in a local job placement office, and will have access to people who are going to help them with their resume. The person who has no help with that, and that may be somebody who has been long-term employed, hasn't done a resume in 40 years, and now in this recession finds themselves looking for a job and hasn't looked at resumes and is dredging up some old thing and trying to update it, is going to be at a huge disadvantage and may not know how to explain all of the attributes that they could bring to the new position because they've been in the same job for 30 years. And a resume writer may be able to help extract from them all of the skills, talents, and abilities that they have developed over the 30 years in this job that need to be listed on a resume. So you're not just saying worked at this plant from 1980 to present, but you're saying did all these things, learned all these things, can do these things, et cetera, et cetera. Have these skills, communication skills, writing skills, whatever. I think there is obviously lots of artifice in the world. We wear, well, we, meaning women, we wear makeup. That's an artifice. That's to look the best we can, to give us the greatest advantage we can have in meeting and interacting with people. Our choice of clothing is sending a message. We want to look like a hippie, a goth, a preppy, however, we want to present ourselves in a certain way. And people get style advice, makeup advice, all kinds of help in this. And so getting help in crafting a resume, I think, is a valid thing to do.
Okay, very well done. Now I'd like to
thank you.
I'd like to
you'd like to rip that apart.
Yeah, and well, that's what a debate is about. But
right.
It was you certainly made the case reasonably well, quite well. So, here are my thoughts. I want to respond rather than just give a monologue and in as though you hadn't spoken. I want to start by responding to your points.
Okay,
you said that people. Your talk was basically divided into your argument was two different arguments. The first part of your argument was that people run into other people who can help them with their material, and so why not use them?
Mm-hmm.
There is a big difference. The best analogy to me is a college application essay. If I am applying for college. To college, the college is using that essay to assess not only what my experiences were, because most of the questions do come out, what were your experiences, like a resume, it asks what your experiences are, but it's looking to assess my ability to write, to think, to organize, to plan, to control errors, to not have typos, and things like that, as an index of what kind of a student would I be. Similarly, the employer uses a resume not just to list what the work accomplishments were, but as an indicator of various attributes that are essential on so many jobs: the ability to organize, to write, to think, to be error-free in a document. And so, when a college student, a college-bound student, hires somebody to a college essay writer, that is fooling the employer, the college, into thinking that that student is a more organized, better thinker, more error-free person than he or she in fact is. Similarly, when a job applicant hires a resume writer he or she is misleading the employer to think that he is better organized, more error-free, a clearer thinker than the person otherwise would be. Put yourself in the shoes of the employer, and let's say you are looking to hire somebody, and in this job market, there are so many applicants for the job. You have got to screen the applicants using the resume, and the person who gets in for the interview gets a huge advantage because he or she is screened from the hundreds of applicants to be one of the three of five to get a chance at the job. So instead of 1 out of 100 chance of getting the job, the person is 1 out of 3. If that person has hired a resume writer to make the person look better than they are, that is unfair to the employer who's got perhaps the incorrect pool of people he is interviewing. Rather than the 3 to 4 most competent people, it may be the 3 or 4 people who were rich enough to hire a resume writer. With regard to your other point, that we're all artifice, people wear makeup or clothing. When you walk into the interview and let's say your hair is colored or you have makeup, it's apparent to that interviewer, and that may in fact be a legitimate, that is still you, that is the you you're going to present. So if, for example, if they hire you and you are customer facing, the fact that you've taken the time to look attractive and color your hair and put makeup and be more attractive is actually would be a net plus, and it's certainly not a subterfuge. Whereas when you're hiring somebody to write your resume, it's clearly deceives the employer in terms of what the person is really like. If it wasn't a deception, and if the person who was the job applicant was proud of it, why would he not have the resume have a line in it that says, "This resume was written by Mary Jones, professional resume writer"? Nobody would do that because it is a subterfuge. Okay, so that's my argument there. Now let's switch roles, and let's have you take the argument for why you think it's a bad idea, why it's unethical or bad in other ways, to hire a resume writer.
I think you are creating a false impression of who you are. If somebody else is, well, this is hard for me to do because we haven't even talked about, once again, all the nuances involved.
Do it with nuance. Do it. Remember, the larger purpose is not to have a debate. The larger purpose of this is to help our dear listenership have a more nuanced, full-dimensioned view of the issue. Do with it what you think is right, Barb.
There are subtle differences between, quote, hiring a resume writer, asking your mother, your best friend, someone to look at your resume and assist with it, suggest ideas. Hiring a resume writer to totally develop your resume and particularly put in things that are not true or are so exaggerated in terms of your claims for particular competencies and skills is absolutely wrong, morally, ethically, in every other possible way. That would not be correct. Nobody puts a note at the bottom of a resume. You're right. They would never say this was written by so-and-so. They also wouldn't put a note that says this was helped by mom. And in terms of writing college essays, I can't think of anybody who would write a college essay and send it in without getting input from 10 or 15 of their closest, most intimate friends to help polish it up. So that's where the nuancing part comes in. So the negative part would clearly be if someone is making up things you haven't done, that's out and out lying. That's never tolerable. If they are grossly exaggerating what you can do, that's absolutely intolerable, because then you are wasting the time of the employer to call you in if you don't have the skills to do the job.
Okay. All right. Now I'll make I guess what I feel I need to do is rather than just take the other, I can't really make the argument a full legitimate argument in favor of hiring a resume writer. So I'm going to do what I offered you the opportunity to do and you took, which is to be more nuanced. I think in light of this conversation, there is a continuum. There's a continuum of the amount of help that one gets. And on the least involved part of the continuum, it's simply saying, hey, Give me your overall feedback on this, on my resume or my college essay. And if somebody says, you know, it could use better organization, or you could use some more specific examples, or why don't you list what's more accomplished? That's fairly minor. I don't think there would be a whole, you know, all sins are somewhere on the scale from venial to mortal. And that's a fairly minor one, and I wouldn't particularly be concerned about it. I am concerned, by the way. You mentioned, in fact, this notion that everybody does it. I'm very worried about the everyone does it kind of ethics. Yes, it seems like, you know, everybody, first of all, everybody doesn't hire a resume writer. Everybody doesn't cheat on their taxes. Everybody doesn't cheat on exams. I just don't, I think that's indefensible. But let's look at the nuance of the continuum of help that people get. Maybe I'm being too high-minded to say that the purist should, let's say, who's writing his resume, get no help, but rather anybody can find an article on how to write a resume. And that little bit of self-efficacy, whether it be through Google or in a library, it doesn't take much to get the basics of writing a resume. So the really most ethical standpoint, which I recognize human beings are just not that always that ethical, the far end of the continuum is no help. Find an article on the essence of resume writing. That gets you professional guidance without it at all feeling unethical because you have dug it up yourself rather than just saying showing it to your mom. But then the next step on the continuum is still fairly minor, as I said, getting general input. Yeah, you know, son or daughter, or, you know, you might want to make this more organized or fix these typos or whatever.
How about you might want to make this more organized? I would put this over here and I'd move this down there.
That's the next step on the continuum. That's what I'm saying. It's
that's
a continuum.
That's the problem.
And so, but like in everything else, sins get worse. That's why there are certain crimes that get punished with a warning. You know, if you have a taillight out and a cop stops you, generally he will give you a fix-it ticket, which costs you zero. But if you are driving with a blood alcohol level of 0.40, you're going to have a very stiff penalty. So this is a continuum. And what I'm pointing out is, along the continuum, getting a little help from your mother, you might want to move this paragraph down, is a fairly venial sin. But when we get to hiring the professional resume writer, which was the core question of the debate, it is no professional resume writer, to my knowledge, simply says, well, move this paragraph down. They usually take the resume. They say, okay, sit down, tell me about your background, and they write the resume. And that is, to me, very, very unfair to society in every possible way. Because the person who chooses to say, who realizes that writing, that an employer reviews a resume to assess the person's thinking skills, organizational skills, ability to write error-free, etc., and find an article on how to write a resume, and then write that resume, that honest person, especially, is being unfairly judged compared to someone who's going to spend some money or go get taxpayer-paid free resume advice. It leads to, and it's unfair to that honorable candidate. It's unfair to the employer who's going to therefore not be able to validly use the resume to screen applications. It's unfair to eventually the coworkers because if a less qualified person gets hired, and a resume is certainly a significant part of the hiring process, then the coworkers get worse coworkers. There are worse products and services. I'm not saying it's like exploding a suitcase nuke in downtown. It's not that big a sin. But I do think it is unethical to hire a resume writer. That's my take. What's your reaction?
I think you make an absolutely valid point. Yes, hiring a resume writer to totally develop your resume is presenting something that you're not capable of doing.
I'll take one more attempt at nuance. I suppose, at least in theory, and I don't know how often it would occur in practice, that a person who holds out a shingle saying, I'm a professional resume writer, could at least be more ethical if what he or she did was the following. The ultimate word that would govern that person's resume writing behavior is the word reveal, not enhance. There are some people who have really fabulous skills. And somehow, because perhaps they are a non-native speaker of English or say linguistically poor, let's say they're a computer programmer, and linguistic competence doesn't really matter at all on that job, or they're a truck driver, then having a resume writer to enhance, not to enhance, but to reveal what that person's true skills that are relevant to that job, that then crosses the line into ethics. So those are the two characteristics, that it reveals rather than enhances the reality, and whereas the skills, and if the person is applying for a job for which the skills embedded in resume writing are not critical, that is, organization, writing, critical thinking, if that person is applying for jobs as a ditch digger or a taxi cab driver or a truck driver or anything else where those resume skill or security guard, where those skills in writing a resume are not that relevant, then it becomes a far less ethically challenged position. Does that make sense?
Who could disagree with that? So we didn't do a really good job of debating it, but I think it's an interesting conversation.
I think we did. I think you did a fine job of presenting the argument in favor of it as well as it could be presented. We presented the counters, and in every good debate, there is one side that ends up holding sway. That's what a debate should be. It is making the best case. I mean, that's what our system of jurisprudence is based on. The notion that each side presents the best case arguments on both, the best made arguments on both sides, and then the more just one prevails. And because of our little innovative system where each of us takes one side of the debate for at least part of the time, we eliminate the confounding of who's the better debater in the decision-making process, and instead the truth comes out. So I think it's fine. Now, dear listeners, so would you like to weigh in on whether you think, in light of our conversation, do you think it, under what's, let's be nuanced again, under what circumstances do you think it is and isn't appropriate to hire a resume, or not just hire, use a resume writer, whether you're paying for it or the taxpayer is paying for it, or it's simply your mother? Under what circumstances is it valid to get help on your resume, and what sorts of help beyond the reading an article on it, which everybody would agree there's no ethical questions about that? The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls to come in, Barb, I want to, at least in light of what we've said, share a suggestion as to what employers should do, since it is unethical to hire a resume writer to rewrite the resume. Employers need to be equipped with at least a little bit of tools to help them ferret out if somebody's resume is written by themselves or by somebody else. And the biggest tip I would offer is simply to look for discordance. Is the quality of writing and thinking and organizing in the resume consistent with what that person's job history is? If that person is a high school dropout and has only had a job as a truck driver's assistant, and his resume looks like it was written in the King's English, then that would suggest that there is that there may have been a resume writer involved. If there is consistency with the person's work and educational history and the quality of the resume, that is at least some indication that a resume was written by the person, him or herself. Does that make sense?
That absolutely sounds quite reasonable.
Would you believe all our lines are lighted up? Instantly,
no.
They all line up, so let's go right to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
Hi, two things. As you said before, an interview is an acting contest, so there's a bit of falseness in the process to begin with. And also,
how do you mean? What's false? Was there something false in this?
No, I mean in terms of if you're saying that professionally written resume doesn't represent the individual. Well, you know, neither does the interview in a way.
But you don't make the process more because the interview is imperfect. We haven't talked about interviews. I also think it's fairly unethical to get interview coaching where you get rid of some. Let's say the person's been unemployed for 4 years because he's been smoking pot all day. I do think it's unethical to hire a resume, an interview coach, to help you make up some BS story about how you were writing a book on the, you know, on the exact field that the job is. So, you know, that just because there are other sources of fraud in the job interview process doesn't mean we should legitimate fraud in the resume process.
Okay, better argument. I'm a great job candidate, great worker. However, there could be a problem with anxiety, writer's block that doesn't represent the true me, so handing in some sloppy crap off the top of my head to get it in the door isn't really representing the true me anyway, so I need someone to clean me up in the same way that you might need someone to consult on your wardrobe before a TV appearance.
But if you've got anxiety, if your anxiety is enough to get in the way of even writing a resume when there's no time pressure and you're working on your own pace, isn't that irrelevant? Isn't that relevant for an employer to know? Because you're more likely to have anxiety, in at least in some of the work situations.
No, as I've experienced personally, the job search process, even at home with nothing to do all day, can be unbelievably daunting and can be like emotionally trying to walk through mud.
And that so much so that even if you have no time, you can't write the resume. That
yeah, actually, time pressure might make it easier.
Anyway, Barbara, you have a comment on this, or should we go to the next call?
Well, again, we get back to all the nuances of it. I know it's like the true and false test.
Mm-hmm.
I think that getting some help in putting your best foot forward in a resume is okay. Out-and-out lying about what you've done is not okay.
We have no time. We have time for one quick call, so I want to thank you for the call. We have time for a very brief comment. What is your brief comment or question? It's you.
Hi, Marty. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Okay. I agree with you that if the person is like a trucker, has nothing to do, there's nothing involved with writing, that you definitely, it would be okay to use a writer. There's a falseness in evaluation, and I think your previous caller pointed this out at the beginning, was kind of going there. These people are using software to match words. They're not evaluating you as a person. So having a resume that matches those words is important, and those agents that you hire to help you do that will get you through that gate.
Well, the problem, because we're out of time, so thank you for the call. The problem is, sure, there's an automated, if I am looking to find somebody who can program in Python, I'm a large corporation, I'm going to have put those resumes through the software that say, you know, get me people whose resume has the word Python in it. That doesn't legitimate doing something invalid to make it past the screen. Barbara, I got to say goodbye. Barbara, thanks
okay.
very much for being
Goodbye.
My guest. Yeah, thanks very much.
That was sort of fun.
Oh,
when I didn't get an A.
You did very well. Your overall
well,
performance
you.
On the show is, as usual, an A, or at least an A-. Anyway, that's Work with Marty Nemco for this week. My thanks to my board operator, Debbie Kennedy, and, of course, to all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will offer a 5-minute course in time management, plus the un-MBA, How to Succeed in Business in the Real World. Plus, as usual, you can call in for a 3-minute career workover, although we didn't let you do that today. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
Just published 6 books on how to do life, what they didn't teach you in school, and 1,000 of his published articles are free on his website. From there, you also can email him if you'd like coaching on your career or to comment on this program. His site, martynemco.com. That's martynemko.com. And you can join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemco right here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.